you can still learn a lot from somebody, and you can maintain friendships with people you disagree with. And I think that's a great challenge for a lot of us, but I think it's so important for our world.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get a million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and our guest today, in a word, is brilliant. His name is Dr. Ben Granger, and he has spent more than 15 years building, running, and optimizing employee measurement and management programs across hundreds of organizations, including numerous Fortune 500 companies. As chief workplace psychologist, Dr. Ben leverages original research to offer insights into macro workplace trends, employee experiences, and the future of how we work. His research has been published in academic and practitioner forums, including CNBC, Forbes, Reworked, the Journal of Business and Psychology, the International Journal of Training and Development, and many others. And he has also been featured in major media outlets such as ABC News, Business Insider, Bloomberg, CBS News, Fast Company, Fortune, The New York Times, and The Wall Street Journal. He's here today to talk about his book, A Leader Worth Following, How to Master Yourself, Influence Others, and Create Exceptional Experiences, which is available everywhere today. Dr. Ben, welcome to The Daily Helping. It is outstanding to have you with us today.
So glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Dr. Richard.
Oh, you're so welcome. There's so many things that we can get into. You're a psychologist. I'm a psychologist. That always excites me. But before we do, and before we really start talking about a leader worth following, I want to jump in the Dr. Ben time machine. Take us back to some of those seminal moments that put you on the path you're on today.
I think one of the most important experiences for me was literally when I was born. And so one thing not a lot of people know about me, but is a huge part of my life, is that I was adopted. And so my parents, my birth parents, had me when they were in high school. They're not together anymore, but they gave me up for adoption. But there was, at the time when I was born in South Louisiana, there was an emerging movement to drive open adoption. And for those who are not familiar with open adoption is when the birth parent puts their child up for adoption, but wants to maintain contact with the birth child and the adoptive family. I was the very first open adoption in the state of Louisiana back in 1984. And what's important about that for my formation is that, you know, one of the ways, you know, Dr. Richard, from as being a psychologist, and in our field, there's this great debate between nature and nurture, you know, and I always think of that scene in, what was it, Wedding Crashers, when Christopher Walken's character, he says, nature versus nurture, Lodge, nature always wins, you know, and it's a great line, but it was also incorrect. And so one of the things that is very, very important for me is that now that I have a relationship with my birth parents, both my birth father and birth mother, I get to see some of the things that I got from them genetically, but I'm also very, very, very influenced by my adoptive family. And so my adoptive mother, for example, was very in tune emotionally, one of the most emotionally intelligent people that I know. My dad was an avid reader. And so a lot of the things that I've developed and, you know, the psychologist I turned to be, I think is a perfect marriage between what I got genetically and what I grew up with in my environment. So that's probably the most important seminal experience for me, because it's really shaped who I am today.
Your description of meeting your birth parents and learning what they gave you and what you got from your adoptive parents is right on. It's nature and it's nurture, right? And so there's some really fascinating twin studies, and we could talk about that all day. But It is that combination, which is neat because knowing that, you understand there's some degree of hardwiring, but it's not absolute, right? Just because you might have a relative who, say, abused alcohol doesn't mean that you're going to abuse alcohol. You just need to be more mindful when you're at a bar. Probably don't get plowed and don't do that on a regular basis, and things should be okay. So I want to move us back towards the book a little bit, because as I've mentioned to you before we hit the record button, this isn't a leadership podcast per se. It's a personal development show. What I find intriguing about your book is the subtitle, right? A Leader Worth Following: How to Master Yourself, Influence Others, and Create Exceptional Experiences. This very much has a Dale Carnegie feel to it. Dr. Ben, talk to us about why you decided to write this book and why now?
The true story here is that I never really intended to write the book. And so, but the journey, I can point back to about 4 years ago. I've been with my company now, Qualtrics, for over 10 years. It's just an amazing culture. And we have an incredible mission to improve the human experience through business. And so it's something that deeply resonates with me today still. It has, you know, even when I started 10 years ago. So about 4 years ago, I was doing a lot of work with the popular press and the media, and our head of PR came and said, "Hey, Ben, you know, we really need to elevate your job title because of all the PR work you're doing." And so they came up with this idea for this great job title, Chief Workplace Psychologist. And I was like, yeah, sign me up for that. I don't know what that means, but sign me up. And so the problem, though, was I'm surrounded by incredible psychologists, behavioral scientists. I mean, some of the greatest professionals I've ever worked with are surrounding me at the company. And so I had this little moment of imposter syndrome, or as I point out in the book, it's really imposter phenomenon. Of, oh my God, do I deserve this? Should I earn this? And I decided I should. And so I just went through on a tear of reading books, academic articles, papers, started in the area of leadership because I was leading a team of exceptional psychologists at the time. I was going through the normal struggles that a people leader goes through. And I just started reading all over the place: cognitive psychology, neuroscience, evolutionary psychology, physics, astrophysics, cosmology, quantum physics. And I just started tearing through. And wherever the book took me to go next, I went. And when I read, I write. And so, Dr. Richard, I had like hundreds of notes on my iPhone that I was taking. Quotes from books, ideas that popped into my mind, connections with the work I do. And then I was sitting, I'm a spiritual person, and I was sitting in church one morning and just doing some meditation and prayer. And I was like, you know, maybe I should share what I'm learning with the world. And so at that moment, I decided, let me write a book. I've never done that before. Let me do that. And you can't make this stuff up. I mean, that exact week, not 2-3 days later, I got reached out to by a major publisher who had read something I'd published and said, "Hey, this sounds, you know, what you're writing about and researching sounds like stuff we like to publish books on. Would you be interested in partnering on a book?" So it was that moment where I decided, okay, let's do this. Let's write a book on it. But I should note, you know, and even as you point out that, you know, this isn't a leadership podcast, this is actually really important for me in the development of the book, because when I first started the project, I had my eyes narrowly set on, let me write something for people leaders. And as I started putting it in all this content into the format of a book, I was rereading one of my favorite Brené Brown books, Dare to Lead. And it dawned on me at that moment, that's too narrow of a definition of a leader. It's not just a person who formally leads direct reports. We're all leaders, not just in our work, but also in our lives. And so that's where really the subtitle comes in, is that this is really about how we as human beings in the groups that we work and we live in can get better at understanding ourselves, understanding our minds, understanding our brains, understanding our bodies, and taking more ownership over the images that get formed in other people's minds when they see us behave and we act and we speak. And we learn in the book how to look at the world through the lenses of others, both from controlling and mastering your body language, all the way to the mental exercises that I think every human should engage in on a regular basis, such as future-oriented introspection. So that's a little bit about the development of the book. But anyway, it's been a hell of a journey, a four-year journey of study. And I can say today I am a far better human being than I was 4 years ago.
Outstanding. I can clearly tell this is a different kind of leadership book. Let's jump in, Ben. Let's jump in, Dr. Ben. Tell us, so take us through some of the key tenets of this book, what a reader is going to learn.
Well, the first part is really just to question our collective definition of what a leader is. And so right at the get-go, I use a very simple dichotomy of we all follow leaders, all of us. We all lead too. But the leaders we follow, I think, can be categorized as leaders we follow because we feel like we have to. And then there's also leaders that we follow because we want to. And so that's really the key opening of, well, who do we want to be? Do we want to be people who people follow because they feel like they have to, they feel like they're going to be threatened or they're going to get some sort of force, maybe not physical force, but psychological force against them? Do they feel like they can't pull themselves away from us? Or do we earn their volitional followership by, you know, essentially being a servant leader? And so that's really one of the key points I make. And I draw on a lot of the research that we've conducted over the years at Qualtrics that demonstrates that organizations as a whole, the companies we do business with, the companies that we work for, we have strong evidence that the companies who develop leaders who earn volitional followership, bring teams together, they are more productive in the aggregate, and they actually generate more money. So it's sort of this, one of the things that I run into in my work is this, I don't know if it's an ideology or a philosophy that as a leader, especially senior leaders, we're going to get this done my way, and that's the only way. And we got to focus our sights directly on those financial and operational outcomes. And I just fundamentally disagree with that. All of my experience and all of my research suggests that that is not correct. And that really, when you break down what an organization is, it's quite simply just a group of people who are working together toward a shared mission. And that mission is invariably about meeting the needs of other people. And so you have to bring human psychology and how humans think and operate and how they behave into the equation of how do you get to those financial and operational outcomes that every organization is trying to pursue. So I make the argument that really it's about bringing more humanity and more of those what we would traditionally call soft skills are really the hard skills of leadership. And those are the things that organizations really desperately need to develop, especially as we move into a future where uncertainty is going to reign and where the change is going to accelerate. As you know, Dr. Richard, and as I know, when people are environments that are fast-paced and changing and uncertain, they do weird things. And so I think we're going to have to get much better at understanding how the human mind operates in order to thrive in those environments.
You know, Dr. Ben, this kind of brings me back in a roundabout way to this nature-nurture kind of a conversation from earlier, because I agree with you wholeheartedly, and the data speaks to this, that it is the soft skills, being able to communicate, see other people's points of view. Emotional intelligence has become a buzzword, but it's their soft skill-laden things in EQ. And I was thinking, you know, is it just that we are realizing now that these soft skills are so important, or have the makeup psychologically of the workplace, has that workplace shifted to where 20 years ago, maybe those soft skills didn't matter so much and they do now? Or is it just that we know now that soft skills are important?
That's a great question. My answer would be it's probably a bit of both. And a great example of the nurture, the environmental influence here, I think is actually with AI. And as we're starting to see intelligent technologies come into the workplace, and I think there's going to be dramatic new technologies that come shortly after we're going to get comfortable with AI as our coworkers, and then the world's going to flip again. And I hint to that in the introduction of the book. But I think part of it is now that we can see what artificial intelligence is really capable of doing, it's taking on a lot of those traditional hard skills. We're able to offload some of those hard skills. And I think one of the benefits of AI is that it's actually highlighting what humans are uniquely good at. And so as we see more and more usage of AI in the workplace, I do think there's a great potential. There's also a lot of dangers too, but I think there's great potential for us to say, what makes us unique to the value that we can create for the organization now that I can offload a lot of the work I used to do onto this machine? Well, a lot of it falls in the realm of the soft skills, you know, and one of the great lines I've heard from one of my clinical psychologist friends is, you know, AI can mentor and can coach, can do all the things tactically that another human mentor or coach can do, but there's one thing that it can never do, and that's be another human who cares about you. And I think that's a really powerful point. And it kind of shows that as we move into this world, the things that make us uniquely human are going to be the things that really differentiate and are valuable. But I also think, back to your question, I do think we know a lot more today than we used to. And so I still believe, I don't know if you'd agree, Dr. Richard, but I still think that our understanding of the human brain and the human mind is in its infancy. And yet we still know a lot more today than we did even just 40 years ago. And a great example of this that I talk heavily about in the book is, you know, the old prospect theory versus utility theory. And it was only, 50 years ago that the common belief was that human beings are primarily logical in their thinking. And now today we know that that's absurd. And it's not even close to true.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. You know, there's a concept called the Flynn effect, which I'm sure you're aware of. And that is that essentially over time, human beings as a collective, our IQs go up. And that is the mean IQ of society is getting higher too by nature of that, because we're being exposed to more information, which is cumulative, and we're learning more. So I would agree that we're certainly smarter than we were 10 years, 20 years, 50 years ago. I also think we as human beings have never been more at risk in terms of our development because of some of these technology-enabled solutions. For the first time in human history, knowledge isn't special anymore. It used to be that, you know, our societies hierarchically were built upon levels of acquired knowledge and skills. And you know this because you're a psychologist as well. People value things that have value, that have meaning, right? If you go to the mall and there's a little lady handing out toothpicks of popcorn chicken from Panda Express, you don't put any value on that. But what AI has done for us is it has made knowledge a commodity that's like the popcorn chicken from Panda Express. And so, and listen, I use it all the time and it's very cool, but I also recognize that there is a reliance or the potential for an over-reliance, particularly for people who are really young and, you know, are coming up through their schooling. Where's the critical reasoning, right? Because that's the piece that, in addition to our emotionality, which is so important, our critical reasoning skills are so important. And that's something you develop. It's like a muscle, right? And if you never have to make decisions because a machine, an algorithm, is making decisions for you, how can we ever show up as a leader? So, like everything, there's good and bad, but I think you have to be aware of them all. So I'm now, I recognize that I'm now on a soapbox, so let me step down.
I actually love these points, and if I could just tee off on a little bit of what you're saying here too, I do agree with what you're saying, and I think that AI has commoditized knowledge, but I don't believe it has or can commoditize wisdom. And I view those two things as very different. And one of the things you pointed out, Dr. Richard, is it's not, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I'm hearing you say is similar to what I think, is that AI in itself is not good or bad. It's how we decide to use it. And so that's actually one of the things we've been studying, is what are employees and consumers comfortable with? What are they not comfortable with? You know, we did a study back in 2022 when generative AI was really starting to come mainstream. And we went out to executives and we went out to frontline employees and we asked them, hey, how do you feel about AI coming into the workplace? At that point, it was this amorphous blob in people's minds, right? They didn't really, maybe it was ChatGPT, whatever it was, very simple tools then. But, you know, they were basically, we go to executives and 2/3 of executives, the modal response was, I'm excited. They were excited about it. And what they were excited about? Efficiency, higher margins. We can get more done with less resources. All the stuff you would expect executives to say. That's their job. Then you go to frontline employees. 2/3 of them, the modal response was scared. And so we dug into that and we asked, well, what are you scared of? First concern was losing my job. Second concern, the workplace losing its sense of humanity. The third concern is exactly what you said, Dr. Richard. People were worried about humans losing their critical thinking skills, becoming too reliant on it. And so far, we've now fast forwarded a few years. We continued to do research on this. We have done a bunch of research on case studies of highly effective AI implementations, highly ineffective AI implementations. And one of the things that we've seen is the biggest difference between those two is in whether they are being deployed by organizations to be just this Swiss Army knife tool to do whatever, offload all your thought work and all your the stuff. Remember where we used to have team meetings? You don't need to do that anymore. You can just run it all through AI. Those are failing miserably, partly because their employees are not adopting them correctly. And downstream, my firm belief is those organizations and the people that make them up are going to atrophy those abilities. And what happens when we don't have the knowledge or the expertise to check their work? Big, big problem.
We've seen things like that show up in the media, where and some of them are funny and some are not because people get harmed, but one of the more, at least to me, humorous ones was a lawyer who got in trouble because he used AI to create his argument, and I think it was ChatGPT basically gave him a citation, but it made it up.
Right.
It wasn't real, right? And so it sounds real, and so that's one of the dangers, right? Because if we can't double check, if we can't go back behind, because these things are not perfect, they make mistakes, they're getting better, but like you said, there's a lot of good, there's a lot of bad. You know, it's just good that we have that awareness of both to really use it effectively. So I want to jump back into the subtitle a little bit, because the two that really, well, they're all three subtitles are interesting, or parts of the subtitle, but master yourself. Now, you talked in the beginning about, you know, you read quantum science and evolutional psychology and all of these things. So I love when people do that because now you have this kind of smorgasbord of ideological informational pieces that you've, I suspect, molded together into this. So from the master yourself part of the book, what are some things that people can do to really make themselves better, not just leaders in their work, but be better people?
I think some of the key parts. So the way I organize the book is I organize it into three parts, three chapters in each part. And the middle section, the second part, has three chapters that kind of go together that are truly focused on self-development. And the first is how to create ongoing dialogue. And this is all about the history of communication. So I do a little bit about the history of communication, but one of the most important lessons I learned in my research, probably one of the most surprising things that I found in my reading, was how relatively recently humans learned to talk. And so I sort of just took it for granted. Humans have always been able to talk. You know, that's just so something is so primal to the human experience. And yet, when I looked at it from an evolutionary or cosmic perspective, this is disputed among anthropologists, but most estimates suggest that humans learned to talk and use words about somewhere between 100 and 200,000 years ago. Now, most people would say that's a really long time. Sure, from the perspective of people that think in months and weeks and years, yeah, it's a long time. But if you zoom out, and you think about how long mankind has been communicating non-verbally. We've been communicating non-verbally for many millions of years. And so from a cosmic perspective, I find it useful to think we've been communicating non-verbally forever. We learned to talk yesterday, and we learned to write an hour ago. And so our communication, which in modern day, you know, social media, text messages, emails, corporate communications are mostly reliant on words. And so that's where chapter 6 comes in, which I titled Master Your Body. And it's largely about how to take more ownership over body language. And so it kind of goes back to that evolutionary point and says, hey, there's a reason why when, you know, you're having a meeting, why you shouldn't cross your arms. What signal does that send to the person you're meeting with in person? Or when you're having a really important conversation, should you sit with a desk in between you and the other person, or should you remove the physical barrier? That makes a difference in the perception of the person, the other person. I talk about handshakes. So it's a very, very practical chapter, in fact. But how do you give a handshake that was likely to make the other person feel comfortable to collaborate, to share more ideas, versus like what sort of handshakes will shut it down? Or what sort of handshake would you get, you know, if you run into what I call an ill-willed alpha? So I have a lot of practical guidance for people who are, you know, work or live with people who are like old school aggressive alphas who can mute your influence. And how do you combat that without making yourself be perceived as a threat to the other person? And then the other chapter in here is one that I think you will love, Dr. Richard, Master Your Mind. And it's all about the evolution of I talk a little bit about the evolution of the human brain and then the two systems of the mind, what we sometimes call the automatic system, the system that's responsible for most of our thinking, which is unconscious, very uncomfortable thought for us, but it's true. But then contrast it with the reflective system and the part of the mind that's powered by the more advanced part of our brain and the part of our brain that actually makes us unique from other species. And so how to engage that more powerful part of your brain, we give a bunch of different practical tactics on how to do that. And then one place where this was also one of the most interesting parts for me in my study was also not being too reliant on the logical part of our brain. And, you know, I opened a section in that chapter with the common advice we all get, like, you know, get your emotions out of here, take your emotions out of the equation. which is usually something we hear with positive intent. You know, and say, hey, don't knee-jerk reaction to something that you're going to regret, which is really good advice, by the way. But I don't think we should go so far as to say we should ignore our emotions. And I actually think that's a really bad idea. And so I give some practical guidance as to how we can actually balance the two types of thinking, that automatic thinking, emotional thinking that our brains are wired to do. And I remind us that those things emerged for a very good reason from an evolutionary perspective, and we should pay attention to those. But we also should learn how to engage the more advanced parts of our brain, prefrontal cortex and those parts, to that can override some of the ill-advised knee-jerk reactions that sometimes we're prone to. And by the way, back to the point of we're going to be moving into an increasingly fast-paced environment with high degrees of uncertainty. Those are the times when I think we need to use the higher parts of our brain, but they're the times when we're least likely to do so.
Unless we train ourselves to use them.
Exactly.
Dr. Ben, this has been such a joyful conversation. You've clearly looked at leadership from a very unique perspective, really a number of perspectives. And I think this is a book that everybody should read. As you know, I wrap up every episode by asking my guests just this one question. And that is, what is your biggest helping? That one most important takeaway you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our chat today?
I'm going to steal a quote. It is my second favorite quote of all time.
You know you're going to have to give us the first one, right?
Well, it's a Michael Jordan quote about growth mindset. So that's the first one. And it's in the book, so I'll leave a little cliffhanger for those. But my second favorite quote, which is also in the book, is from Stephen Hawking, the great cosmologist and astrophysicist. And it is, mankind's greatest achievements have come about by talking. Its greatest failures by not talking. It doesn't have to be like this. All we need to do is keep talking. And so I'd encourage us to keep talking with people, especially people we disagree with. Listen to them, ask questions, really listen. And don't just listen, show them you're listening through your body language and your actions afterwards. And even if you don't agree, you can still learn a lot from somebody, and you can maintain friendships with people you disagree with. And I think that's a great challenge for a lot of us, but I think it's so important for our world.
Well said. The book is called A Leader Worth Following, How to Master Yourself, Influence Others, and Create Exceptional Experiences. That is available everywhere today. That books are sold. But if people heard this, they loved it. Of course they loved it, because you're awesome. And they want to learn more about you, Dr. Ben. Where can they find more about your work on the internet?
Best place to go would be BenjaminGranger.com, and I'll simplify it. I'm Cajun, right? So we got to church up the last name with the French. Benjamin Granger, like Hermione Granger.com, BenjaminGranger.com. By the way, on that site, I think I should note, I'm a music fanatic. And so, quick funny story for you, Dr. Richard, if you could spare another minute. When I wrote the first draft of the manuscript, I had like 30 song quotes and movie quotes, like as epigraphs and weaved in, and I thought I was clever. So I sent that manuscript off to the publisher, and the publisher says, "This is awesome. Got permissions for all these?" And I'm like, "What's a permission?" So I learned a hard lesson about copyright law. And basically they're like, "Yeah, you know, it's hard to get permissions for song lyrics." So had to pull it all out, unfortunately. But what I did, and this is available on the website, I created a companion playlist, and it's all the songs that inspired me as I wrote, and I have them broken down by chapter. And I think it's a really fun little scavenger hunt, so to speak, for the reader to try to spot the connection. Some of the songs are pretty obvious what the connection is, and some are a little harder. But I think it was a lot of fun for me to be thinking about those songs. I want to share that with the readers.
That is very cool. And for those of you in the car or on the treadmill, we got you covered. Everything Dr. Benjamin Granger will be linked in the show notes at drrichardschuster.com. Well, Dr. Ben, this has been outstanding. I knew it would be. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today on The Daily Helping.
Hey, I loved it. Thanks for having me, Dr. Richard.
Absolutely. And I want to thank each and every one of you as well who took time out of your day to listen to this conversation. If you liked it, if you're inspired, if you're going to go start doing some of those things to have better relationships, be a better listener, don't cross your arms when you're talking to people. Go give us a follow and a 5-star review on the podcast app of your choice, because this is what helps other people find this show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post it in your feeds using the hashtag MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.